Welcome back, everybody, to the place where we explore the most important category of intelligence, and it lives in the oldest part of the brain. I'm Sean Johnson, and this is the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. Today, we're bringing you back into the room with some of the smartest minds in banking to John Casey's keynote with our friends at Citibank. This is part two of the keynote, so if you haven't listened to part one, what I recommend is hit pause on this episode, go back and listen to it, because it's going to be much more helpful, put things in even better context for you. Again, because we're kind of taking you behind closed doors here, this is edited for clarity and confidentiality, but I think even still, you're going to find a lot of value here. Please enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Two Logical. Two Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Two Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.
The rest of your year and the rest of your career and the rest of this program all have something in common. They start now. Thank you. That wasn't even it. What I was going to say was, the best is yet to come.
I've heard this before.
It's a simple but true statement. The best is yet to come. You know, looking at some of those survey results, where you guys were candidly answering questions, everything wasn't perfect. You know, there were some gaps. But when I saw that, the first thing I said to myself is, they have those gaps, they have those challenges, but they have this track record of results. And it just hit me. The upside for these folks is huge. Just imagine with some of these fixes, with a better understanding and awareness about talent and development and culture, just think what's possible. Imagine it, because it's the truth. Don't you believe that your best leadership is in your future? It's not behind you. It's ahead of you. Run to it. Too soon and too often is better than too late and not enough when talking about leadership, folks. Too soon and too often. By the way, we'll talk a little bit later. When you show that you care, especially for your people, you can misspeak. You can forget something. You can even make a mistake, and you'll be quickly forgiven. Because your track record is one of, I care. I give a crap. You know, it's amazing when you think about, whenever you go out into the world and you engage, whether you're traveling or going to a restaurant, you engage other people that work for other companies, right? Isn't it amazing how quickly you can tell whether or not somebody cares about what they do? I mean, you go out to a restaurant. Eventually, a server comes to your table. Hopefully. In some countries, you have to flag them down. Some companies just countries you make eye contact, some countries you just, no, they'll eventually get there. But when the server comes to your table and you're out at a restaurant, I guarantee you, within a minute, you know whether or not they care about what they do. You can tell. It's one of the first things that's transferred, whether or not they care about what they do. And by the way, that server, you don't know if they're a trained chef. You don't know how many years they've been in the industry. You don't know if they're an owner. All you know is whether or not they care. It's the first thing that's transferred. It's unconscious. How do we get everybody on the team to care and to believe that what we're outlining for them is not only in their best interest, it's possible. It's likely. And they, your team, they are the ones that they've been waiting for. A leader needs to tell them. Because nobody else can come and do it for them, is it? They're the ones. They're the ones they've been waiting for. So, let's get back to it. You ready? Oh, question. Yes.
Is this on? Okay. So I had a question regarding how we might lead differently, or perhaps it's all the same tools for the younger generation. And so here's what I mean. You know, we have so many dynamic companies out there for a younger generation to go work in. And many of us in this room have spent our career at Citi. And in the eyes of someone who's early in their 20s, we run the risk of looking like maybe sort of the safer place to be, or perhaps a little bit more staid. How do we adjust so that we don't lose great young talent to the Googles of the world? So could you share a little bit of your thoughts on that?
You know, that's a fantastic question. It's a billion-dollar question for some organizations, because that goes back to the retention of talent. And I think we lost our slides because of that powerful question. See the impact a leader can have? You know, they want to feel like they belong to something. They want to feel like they're making a difference. We have to speak to that. And by the way, my experiences with the best and the brightest of the youth of today, they not only want to make a difference, feel like what they do matters, they want to play for a winning team. And they want to be trained. Because they may know technology, they may know some apps that we don't, but what they don't have is experience. And they want it. And you guys have all of that. You are the best they can get. And you're good at training and developing people. And now you're getting leadership as well as management investment. And, you know, you've already said the second most important thing we want to invest in is talent. Tell them that. You've got a great story to tell the best and the brightest coming out of university. Tell the story. Work with each other to develop the story. Especially if they want to travel the world, especially if they want to learn, especially if they want a mentor. Because that's the number one thing they probably need. Because yes, they can study and read the books and take the tests and do all that stuff and get the licensing and all that other stuff, but that pales in comparison to looking people in the eye, asking the right questions in the right order, having difficult conversations. Those are really the tools of a leader that sadly many don't learn until the end of their career. You know, Ganja, to tie it down a little bit back to this slide, they probably want more leadership than management. But I want to give you a couple of quick reminders to know the difference between management and leadership. Managers tell people what to do. Leaders get them to believe they can do it. Managers speak first. Leaders seem to speak last. Managers seem to speak in command. Leaders seem to speak with questions. Managers seem to get behind people and push them. Leaders seem to get out in front of people and pull them. There's huge differences. And I think to put a fine point on the great question, what I think the bright, sharp, highly technologically advanced people coming into the workforce now really want, and they may not articulate it this way, is mentoring, is leadership. Someone to follow, someone to help grow them. Does that help a little bit?
It does.
Great question. And everybody's got a, or every table's got a microphone, don't hesitate. So, okay. I want to share with you an exercise. It's a very simple exercise. And I love to do this exercise for leaders. It's an individual exercise. We get some group exercises coming. But this individual exercise, you can do, you can have your managers do for their teams. You can have an individual contributor do it for themselves. It's a very simple and easy exercise. It's about developing our own vision. Now, I know Global TTS, the vision is to be the best bank on the street. And if you're already the best bank on the street, how do you do it again and again and again and create separation between you and your competitors? If you're not yet the best bank on the street, you're on a journey to that. That's the vision. But an individual country or region or even team vision is to answer the question, how are we going to do that? How am I going to do that? So on page 5 in the workbook is a very simple exercise. Now, most organizations that build a vision, they only build it on one level. We now know it's important to communicate, engage, grow, develop on two levels. This is where the number two and two logical comes from. We don't just do process and skill training. We do mindset, attitude training, always first. So this very simple exercise, and I'm going to call out a couple volunteers. All I want you to do on the top is put down two or three, no more than really four bullets about execution over the next 12 months, about performance, about accomplishment, whether it's a goal or one of those must wins, whether it's a certain revenue number or profit or margin level, or maybe it's just completion of a project. Or maybe it's a relationship built with a certain client. Maybe it's an increase in wallet share, introduction of new product or technology. But you ought to have, every team ought to have three or four hard targets, you know, your must-win battles, that if accomplished, guarantees a successful year. And everybody should know what they are. We should be talking about them at every meeting. By the way, it can't be a dozen. So that's the top of the exercise. And that's common, having a performance-based vision, an execution vision. But where the real value in having a vision can come is building a vision based on reputation or brand. I know some peak performing teams that destroy internal teams on either side of them. Yeah, they got the numbers. They got the numbers. But they left some dead bodies in their wake. They got a bad internal reputation. And they've got a bad reputation with some clients. Eventually, that's going to be a long-term problem. So as we're building a vision based on performance, let's also build one on reputation. So at the very bottom, again, just put two or three bullet points. In a year from now, what would you like the other internal city teams saying about your team? What would you like your clients to, if they were asked to articulate the city brand in your country or region, what would you like them to say a year from now? Ask your team members these questions. Before you necessarily share your answers, you may get agreement, congruency, And why not give them the pride of authorship? I love the way you're thinking. What would be a great example of that? You know, it's funny, ever since I had that wonderful opportunity of being in the right place at the wrong time, but being the wrong guy, I've really studied, you know, successful organizations and businesses and why some grow so quickly and remain successful and others seem to peter out. From the very beginning, Facebook has had a very simple vision. Connect with people. That's it. Every Facebook team and all their acquisitions know how they support that vision. Connect with people. Now, mentioning a very similar high-flying organization, well, they used to be high-flying. Yahoo, another internet success, allegedly, initially. You know, Yahoo never, ever had a vision. They never knew what they were. They never knew what they did. And the only reason why they're still on life support is they made a nice high-flying bet and invested in Alibaba. By the way, if you're in the investment side of things and in that technology space, by the way, as a heads up, Twitter does not have a vision. They do not know what they are or what they do or where they're going. And see what happens in another year or two because of that. So who wants to share a performance-related part of their vision? Somebody grab a microphone. Tell us what you're going to, because there's witnesses here. Tell us what you're going to go after. This is the easy part. The reputation part's coming next.
We're going to deliver on our OCR accuracy for our trade partners.
Does everybody on your team know that?
They do indeed.
They do indeed. How often do you tell them?
Every day. Multiple times a day.
There we go.
Certainly.
You know, spaced repetition, without spaced repetition, without consistency in messaging, they're going to forget. Very good. Anybody else? Want to draw a line in the sand? Let everybody, all their peers know what they're going to go after and deliver this year? Yeah, meet the P&L. Why not? Blow it out of the water. Very simple stuff, very basic fundamental stuff.
We're going to expand on our public sector success in New Zealand and replicate that in Australia.
Wow, there we go. From Kiwi to Aussie. I like it. Usually things might go the other way. I like the way you're thinking.
To improve our VOC scores and implement a project that we have going on, which is Project Reinvigorate, which is looking at employee development, as well as looking at employee engagement.
As we know, those two things are like that. That's awesome. Everybody ought to know on the team the two or three or four deliverables that this team focuses on daily and weekly. Because that's how you're going to get to become the best bank on the street. And whenever you ask the question by another city person or anybody outside of city, hey, what are you guys doing on your team? What are you doing at city? We're on a journey to be the best bank on the street, or again, to be the best bank on the street. Because if you're the best bank on the street, there's a target on your back. And everybody's aiming at it. Let's talk about reputation. Let's talk about branding of your team. Whether it's internal or for the clients, external, somebody share. What are you hoping to get your team to embrace and believe in?
We want our clients to think that our team is a team that is 100% relentlessly focused on making the business a simple, global, and digital business.
Love it. Very simple, straightforward. Having all your clients be able to repeat that back to you, that means you know it's taken root. That means you know you got traction. And then you can start to layer the next piece. And here's how we're doing it here. Love it.
Ensure that whatever is requested by internal stakeholders regarding the compliance, the risk management, the AML stuff has been delivered, you know, by the team. And also the team is so helpful to the other partners as well to always deliver what they can do. Yeah. And to become the go-to people. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, your internal stakeholders and clients are at the top of the list. You know, I talked to Sebastian on the phone. He was great up here on the panel. And he gave me a list, and I could tell with his articulation that that list was top of his mind. This is how I know we're successful. Do we deliver what Navid wants? Do we deliver what the head of Europe wants? And then he had all these other things, and they were boom, 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 boom. And you can tell when something's top of mind in somebody else. And I suspect he shares that with his team, and many of his team members could give the same order and the same priority. So it's about consistent messaging.
Clients to feel that the team is their advocate.
You know, when your clients believe that, that's when you have trust. That's when you can be the advisor to point them in a different direction they haven't thought of, and they'll lean in. We're going to talk exactly how we have that customer intimacy. How do we get to know the customer better than they know themselves so we can understand what of our programs or projects, our products, that we can actually combine. Maybe we can bring a couple of them to really bring a customized solution. We have to have the intimacy and trust first. We're going to exactly talk just about that. I love asking these questions to young professionals coming into the workplace, a 23-year-old MBA, asking them about performance and reputation. Because I lost a few jobs early in my career. By the age of 25, here was my professional reputation. Well, you know, he's kind of sloppy, disorganized, shows up late, leaves a little early, makes promises he doesn't keep, and we think he's stealing office supplies. So all those were in fact true. And I didn't realize the damage I had done by my choices. And then I contrast that with my father's reputation. My father was a banker. My father was in commercial lending for 35 years. And he passed away years ago, I still meet people that remember my dad and say, your dad was a man of honor. He helped grow my business. He believed in me when no other bank did. And now we have hundreds and hundreds of employees. And your dad made a bet on us, and I'll never forget that. And he was a man of high honor, and he loved what he did. Because what he did was he helped businesses grow. And he helped them employ neighbors. And what a high honor that is. Another reason why you should be proud of what you do. Very simple exercise with a lot of depth. But you know what comes after a vision? We can now start to see the impediments. What is in the way? I love asking people the vision question. Where do you want to be next year in terms of performance and reputation? And then after they go all articulate and they have wonderful answers like you just did, I said, well, heck, if that's what you want, why don't you have it now? What's in the way? What are you as a leader going to have to take ownership of and overcome? And by the way, as we now know, we've got gaps at the skill and process level. We also got some belief and attitude gaps. So what are your gaps at the attitude and mindset level and the gaps at your skill and process level? Where are your gaps? Where are you going to have to do your best work in order to accomplish that vision? And if you haven't figured this out yet, this is a consulting model for how we engage clients, for how we gain customer intimacy. Because we have to ask about their goals. We have to ask about their brand or reputation. We have to ask about their problems, their obstacles, their challenges, so we know what to customize, to how to deliver a solution. All right, who's got an example of a belief or an attitude gap that your team needs to close? Who's ever music that was, please share what you think your belief or attitude. What do you think? Anybody? What at the culture level could be holding your team back?
So I think looking at my team, it's, you know, my gap, I guess, is not clearly articulating enough the vision that we have. I think we've put it down on paper, but it's a lot of words. You've got to simplify it a lot. And the team level is then their understanding of, you know, what I'm trying to embolden in them to go out and deliver with the client. So it's an inability, you know, just haven't articulated clearly, being quite, you know, hard on myself. I think that's an area that we need to do.
Yeah, this is a really tough question. Where are your team's belief gaps? What are their attitude gaps?
I would say from my perspective, it's the feeling empowered to do what they believe is outside of their space.
Yeah.
And when the question is asked, well, why do you not feel empowered? They can't really answer the question, but they just don't feel what they're empowered to do outside of their space.
Yeah, I didn't want to step on anybody's toes. I didn't want to make a mistake. I didn't want to get yelled at. And it's that thinking that has to be removed. And we do it by example. We do it by telling them. And by the way, for every one of your direct reports, and you should encourage this in for them to do it with their directs too, we should have a success story for every person on the team where they faced fear and doubt and overcame it, where they built a new strength, where they actually made a mistake and leveraged it. So we should have those success stories at our disposal. So when we can tell that other person is not, they're not on, they're down a little bit, we just drop into mode. Remember that thing we did last November with the so-and-so account? Remember that client, that high-maintenance client that was yelling and screaming at us? You did something. You pivoted. You did something, and you turned that around. And that guy that was yelling at you, you're now friends. You're great at building relationships. How'd you do it? Because you're about to try to help them work on another challenging relationship. But first, you remind them one of their own successes. We'll talk more about the power of stories, especially other people's success stories. You know, you guys have already spent a lot of time today talking about some skill and process gaps. That's the management side. And it looks like you're on the way to kind of addressing some of those and fixing them. But the belief gaps, the attitude gaps, you own them as a leader. And they're often flawed or based on myth or something that actually isn't fact-based. But because people always confirm their own beliefs, and they look for examples that support it. Now, I want to share with you something. It's a psychological term, but you already know what it means. It's called confirmation bias. Confirmation bias. I'm going to define it, and I'm going to do something I rarely, if ever, I do or recommend others to do. I'm going to use a double absolute. Very few absolutes out there. And people that walk around saying always or never, I always take with a grain of salt. So I'm about to use a double absolute. And I'm giving you the disclaimer, and I'm also letting you know I'm a trained professional. Okay, here's the definition of confirmation. Apparently that was only humorous to me. Everyone always looks for examples that support what they believe, and they discount examples that don't. So if somebody thinks they're not good at something, all they remember is the examples that support it. And that's why they avoid it in the future. And they overlook. You know, I fly a lot like everybody in the room. You know what I hear a lot in airports? My flights are always late! I want to jump in and say, statistically, that's not valid. So maybe 20, 25% of your flights are late. And every time one of those flights is late, you tell everybody. You tell total strangers. You tag it into long-term memory. And every time your flight lands earlier on time, boop. You don't tell a soul. You don't tag it into long-term memory. There's no spaced repetition. It's gone, like it didn't happen. Okay, Let's take confirmation bias to the next level. I know everybody in the room is like a boss. And here's what that means if you're a boss. You are one of the primary topics of conversation at other people's dinner tables. I know this for a fact because my dad was a banker. And I can give you his boss's names from the late 1960s all the way through the 80s. Okay? Richard Scott, Marty Birmingham, Richard Colgan. Because he talked about them to my mom at the dinner table and he wasn't kind. Confirmation bias. So what are you going to do about it? If you wrote down some belief gaps, some skill or process gaps, you own them as a leader. So what skills, knowledge, coaching and mentoring, knowing each team member's strengths and weaknesses, you are the multiplier. You are the example. What are you gonna do about it? How are you gonna work on yourself first? You can't ask your team to change unless you change first. Do as I say, not as I do. Doesn't work with kids. It doesn't work with grown-ups. It starts with us. So each of us is our own, like, do-it-yourself project. Having our own individual development plan. Because here's what I know for certain about the multiplicative power of being a leader. When the leader improves, everyone improves. And leadership is about relationships. Being a great leader isn't just about the relationships we have at work. It is about being a better friend. It is about being a better spouse or partner. It is about being a better parent. You know, I know he was a biologist and he said this about species, but you know, it can apply to businesses. It can apply to people. We don't have to start our own individual leadership journey in a vacuum, all by ourselves. I love asking this question, especially in a room filled with successful executives like this. How many of you in your career look back and recall a special individual who took a keen interest in you? They saw the best in you. They may have believed in you more than you believed in yourself. And sometimes, like with Mark Colosi and now Joe Gianni, I keep thinking, what do they see in me? And eventually, I kind of turned myself over. And I didn't know what they saw in me, but I liked it better than what I saw in myself. Now, this is not somebody that jumped in and did your work. This is not somebody that made it an easy path for you. But when you were with them, you grew. You grew. You developed. And even though it may have been 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, that person still pops into your head. And you ask yourself, what would they advise? What would they do? So here's the question. Who's ever had a mentor in your life? Show of hands. Look at all the hands. That is fantastic. All right. Somebody grab a microphone. I'm going to ask you about this person. So somebody raise a hand. I want to talk about these special people. You don't have to give any names unless they're in the room, of course. Oh, quick hand went up over here. So William, is it William?
Yeah.
Tell us, what did this person do for you? Who are you thinking of? What did they do for you?
Actually, this person is in this room. The first time I joined transaction banking is under Michael Guralnik, and he's a very special person. And a lot of training materials that you know presented today started from Michael Gronick, Top Guns, right? Yeah, so I learned a lot from him.
Okay, so let's just say later on, he grabs you in the hallway.
Yep.
And asks you for a favor. Would you do it?
No. I gave my life.
Yeah. You have to, right?
No, I'll do it willingly, not have to.
Okay, I know, yeah. I know. Why though?
You know, the reason being I stand here today because of my appreciation, because of him I'm here today. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you owe him?
Yeah. So he grew me actually.
Yeah. Who else wants to talk about their mentor?
So not in this room.
Okay, very good.
Not at City. But very early in my career, I had a manager. I'd just finished my master's, and it's probably about 7 years between us, but she was American. She had just moved to London, probably about 4 or 5 years before, and she was relentless. She absolutely drove me crazy. She made me work. Her attention to detail, second to none. And I can't count the amount of times that I would draft something or craft something or produce something, and we would work through it, and it would be, LC, that's great. Go do it again, because I know you can do it better. And till today, she and I are friends now.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I'm talking to people, I will always talk about her, because she was the first person I worked with when I started my HR career. And yeah, she absolutely was relentless for perfection.
Yep.
And she would never let me do anything less than my best. And she saw something I didn't see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yes.
So, she brought the best out of you, not just every once in a while, but every time. So same question. She calls you out of the blue, asks you for a favor. Hey, can you drop me off at the airport? Can you pick me up? Can you help me move? Would you do it?
Done.
Why?
Just because.
Because you're indebted.
Done. No.
You want to reciprocate.
Because I want to.
Yeah, because you want to. Because you want to help. So we could spend the rest of our time together and talk to all of you that raised your hands. And we hear the same thing. And by articulating, somebody gave of themselves to you how you feel about doing something for them. I mean, this is it. This is business, this is life. Whether you're a boss and direct reports, hey, what role do you want to be in 3 years? You want to stay as an individual contributor, or do you want to move into management? What are your goals outside of work? Once you know those keys, those things, and then reminding and helping, you will get discretionary effort. This may answer the question when I asked earlier, how many of you, without expecting anything in return, went above and beyond and gave discretionary effort for somebody else? Most of you raised your hand. So somebody has done this for you. How do you do this for others? Because right now, you're not with your team. Are they putting forth discretionary effort right now? Actually, some of your team is sleeping, because the day has already happened. But do they push themselves when you're there as much as they do when you're not? That's the goal, to get them to self-regulate. And applying the law of service, I care, I know what your goals are, I'm trying to help you. We'll get some of that discretionary effort a whole lot farther than just telling them what to do and measuring it. And the great thing about helping, growing, serving, is that you always learn about yourself. And at the end of the day, you know you tried. And there's reward in that. There's satisfaction in that. So how do we build a culture around this? You know, culture is just the shared dominant beliefs of the team. And it impacts everything. And we, as leaders, have to be the product of the product. So that definition is in your book. And this quote is really famous from the retired CEO of Merck. You know, we can be innovative here and here. And if we are just innovative here and overlook the culture, the innovation may be world class. But if the culture doesn't accept it and embrace it and agree, we'll never know. When in doubt, if you're not sure what to do as far as communication, lead, don't manage. Isn't that a powerful quote? So this goes back to a question we heard earlier. All the surveys, all the voice of the employees, this comes right out of the Society for Human Resource Management. Number one thing employees want, pat on the back. No charge. All we gotta do is train our eye and our ear. Train our eye and our ear to recognize incremental progress, growth, trying new things. I feel like they do something that matters. It's important. What's more important than helping organizations grow and understand and manage and digitize and innovate with their finances? You're the best bank on the street. Nobody's better at what you do globally than you. You know, when I was preparing and I see this slide, that I go, this is Citi. This is what they are. What they have is ammunition, leadership ammunition to touch everybody's hearts and minds. Now, by the way, if these three things are not part of a culture, number four goes to number one. Number four goes to number one. And then it does become a spreadsheet game. Make sense? Make sure the first three are in place in your culture. So, as the definition said, it's a filter that everything goes through. And you own it. You own it. You're the product of the product. You got to walk the talk. Elsie, what were those three things again? Know the way, show the way, go the way. Love it. And by the way, if the leader is not saying, this is who we are, this is how we go to market, this is why, there's never an absence of culture. There's never a void. It will always be filled. And sadly, if the leader isn't doing it, somebody else does. And very often, it is the loudest, most negative voice in the room. Becomes the brand. Because the leader's not doing it. Somebody does. Every meeting, every conversation, every email. Be it, show it, go it. You know, the greatest challenge is it's really hard to measure attitude or mindset or belief. You know it when you feel it, good or bad, but you can't put a metric on it. But it doesn't mean it's not valuable. By the way, far too many organizations measure far more than they need to. And they measure stuff that doesn't really even count. But they do have a report, and they're using man hours to do it. Nobody reads it, though. So, you know, as I was thinking about, and this is an exercise we're not going to do because there's an example on how to do it, but, you know, I was making a list over the last couple of days about what are the important, you know, topics for you to build a winning team culture around. And it is about innovation. If somebody thinks they can't innovate or their team can't innovate, that's a problem. It is about the ability to grow. It is about the use of tools and insights and analytics. It is about what they believe about the total address of the market.
So everyone here has at least like two bosses, right? Like they have, you know, two, sometimes more, right? So how do you balance like cultures that aren't, you know, or priorities that kind of are different or not necessarily the same between the two bosses or groups that you kind of work for?
Very good. Difficult question, reality question. And by the way, I know what you're talking about. My boss is just a couple rows behind you and he has multiple personalities. So one day it's this and the next day it's that. And it's like mixed messages. So that's my responsibility to get clarity. So I keep track of what he's asking me to do and which character it's coming from. And I'll give him the list. And I want you on this. And I'll say, okay, in addition to that, I've got this, 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 and this, and this. What order would you like to see him done in? And by the way, also on that list is another list from so-and-so. And I'm going to have to be working these. Can you help me with those as well based on what their needs are? That may not be a perfect answer right there, but the follow-up questions and your thinking about them is the key. Having a mental list or an actual list of your priorities. And every once in a while, Joe will say to me, oh, that's right, I did tell you to work on that last week. You know what? Forget that. I don't want you on that anymore. Put Will on that.
Yeah, I meant more from like a culture viewpoint. I mean, I from a taskless viewpoint, I get it. But I think from a, you know, if you're trying to drive a culture into your team, you know, which side do you kind of?
Yeah, asking the bosses alternate choices. Hey, we can focus on this, this, or this. What order do you want to see them done in? Or which one do you want to see done only? Again, it's giving them the platform to do what they do, which is help us prioritize. But we have to have the right question that hopefully gets the answer we're looking for. And if we don't get the answer that really helps us clarify things, then we didn't ask the right question.
Can I make a comment on that? I think in my experience, when you have good leaders, they typically don't put the matrix employee in a position of conflict. Hmm. They are smart enough, they have a good acumen, that if they have to make, if they have to drive certain priorities and goals, they have to talk to their counterpart to reconcile and then go to the employee from an execution standpoint. I think if you're a leader worth your salt, you will never put somebody who works for you in a position of conflict, because it's your responsibility to resolve that with your peer who is organizationally superior to the employee in question. The leaders who are not good, they will actually try and use the employee to create leverage on the other part of the matrix. So I think it is with the culture and when the value system is embedded and institutionalized, an employee should never be put in a position of conflict on important issues. Of course, there could be, you know, operational or processes related issue where you can just have a conversation, resource allocation and all the rest of it. But in important matters, it should never happen.
Well said. Yeah, the matrix organization is a challenging environment. And that organizations that figure out how to navigate it sooner and better are going to be the winners. And in the end, it's people. It's people talking to people. It's people asking questions of others. And you're all wearing the same jersey. And in the end, you're all out for the same objectives. And you know, that law of service and law of reciprocation works with internal teams too. You know, the product development team that supports behind you. Have you ever gone to them and say, hey, what are your goals this year? What are your biggest challenges that you're trying to overcome? Is there anything we can do out in the regions to help you? Because we're always going to them asking for stuff. Why don't we go to them trying to help them? That same, we're going to talk about another consulting model, that same approach can work to build better bonds and relationships with internal teams, internal people. So let's get to it. This cultural exercise is real simple. It's trying to understand, regarding this important topic, what are the optimal beliefs about it? And by the way, what are the current team's beliefs? And are they flawed? Because long before they're going to embrace and adopt any new strategy or innovation, their beliefs have to be willing to accept it. So great, great little simple exercise here doesn't mean it's not impactful. And of course, you're going to get later conversations about innovation and creativity, really how to instill it in the culture. There's more talks on that. Patrick Lencioni has a famous quote about what happens when you can get a culture aligned. And you know, it's not just Netflix taking out Blockbuster Video. An unknown coming, taking out in a very short time an industry leader and founder. It's about Under Armour eating Nike's lunch. Again, out of nowhere. But what happens when we get alignment at the mindset level? You can compete any market against anyone because it's the people that are the key. And what's key with the people is their hearts and minds. So when we study great managers, we find that there is one consistency across industry, and that is communication about the same stuff. So we have a model. It's very simple and straightforward. It's the simple management model that I promised. It's only got four components. What are the goals? What do we want to accomplish this year, 3 years, 5 years? By the way, the second question in this consulting model is, again, what could stop us? What are the obstacles? What are the threats? What are the contingencies that we're going to employ to reduce them? That is the most overlooked part of management planning. Threat assessment, their likelihood and severity. And then the third part of management is breaking the annual or 3 or 5 year goal into quarterly or monthly strategies. So this section here is where strategy happens. And there's two kinds: contingencies to reduce threats and action plans to break down the goal. And if we can actually understand specific strategy, we can actually create a list of high payoff activities that will drive those strategies, that will link to the goals. This is it. And all of you that I spoke to on the phone, I ask you four types of questions. How do you know when you're successful? What keeps you up at night? What are you most worried about? How are you reducing that? How do you break down the big goals? What activities do you want more of? And that's how I get customer intimacy. So this simple tool is a planning tool that can break big things down to daily or weekly activities. This tool is also an execution tool, a time management tool that helps us execute. And it's just four simple things. What if everybody on your team knows what yours looked like? This is strategy. This is tactics. You know, I thought my dad was really cool when he gave me The Art of War. And he goes, son, here's a business book. I'd like you to read it. Pretty old book. By the way, you know, this guy, Sun Tzu, and Confucius had the same mentor. Really wise man by the name of Lao Tzu, who maybe wrote the first and maybe still the best leadership book ever, called the Tao Te Ching. And that translates to the way and its power. We don't have to look for new necessarily. We can look for what works. The most important thing about employees, frontline troops, they don't see long term throughout most of their day. They just see what's right in front of them. And what if they had a playbook? What if they had 5 or 6 key activities? That's all they had to focus on. And if they do those at the highest level, their annual goals are surpassed. That's simplicity. By the way, there's an example of a high payoff activity list on pages 15 and 16 in your workbook. This is not an industry-specific example. It is just a manager example. What is the playbook for a manager? It's just 7 activities. Many of these activities apply to you. Obviously, for city, they'd be more specific. They'd have your jargon and specific goals and metrics and so forth. But this is it. You know, most job descriptions are not written at the activity level. They're written at the responsibility level. Responsible for generating or producing blank. You know, I read a job description these days, I have no idea what the person's supposed to do. Think about it. Read the job descriptions. Does it have anything written at the activity level? What the person is supposed to do over and over again at the highest level? Rarely do they. That's why this fixes that. Somebody on day one should know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And by the way, most people don't organize their day this way. They organize their day around their comfort zones. Most people actually put more weight and more value on the activities that they like to do and the ones they're good at. Usually that's their old job. Again, a little humor, apparently very little. By the way, that was a mercy laugh. You know, a lot of you have been in sales, a lot of you are married. That means you've actually perfected a fake, sincere laugh. Just give it up every once in a while for the trainer up here. We can't organize our day around our comfort zones. We must organize our day around execution and performance. And this is the tool that helps you with that. And we've given you an extra one right behind it. So if you do the exercise that we're about to share with you, you can figure out the high payoff activities of your role or any role. And I hope you agree that this approach is simple. Successful people don't get everything done. They're just better pickers. And they're not picking randomly or accidentally. They're picking by design. Those are 2 quotes from Einstein about simplicity. Now I'm going to give you the simplest quote that Steve Jobs borrowed. And by the way, if you read the biography that Walter Isaacson wrote, you heard this over and over again, but it came from Da Vinci. Complexity slows people down, causes them to go off. Not simplicity. Love your themes, by the way. So this simple model with only 4 components, just because it's simple doesn't mean it's not profound or has depth. All these things. You want to get customer intimacy? Ask them the questions. What are your goals? What keeps you up at night? How are you breaking it down? What are your new strategies? What about the high pay of activities? What do you want your people doing more of? Oh yeah, you can define roles and responsibility. What if happens if you have 2 teams reporting to you that usually don't get along? What if they knew each other's high payoff activities? Because you know what some teams think about the other team? We're doing all the hard work. They got it easy over there. They get the credit. We're doing the hard work. What if they both think the same thing? This fixes that. Because you as the leader had to tell, those guys are over there. They're doing this. It's so important. It fuels us. And you guys over here, you guys bring it in. And you guys ought to work together. Maybe high-path activities should have communication between those two teams or between countries, like something you need. So this is an exercise that you can do on your own or in groups. But this is the management exercise. You can pick any topic that's important. And you can actually break it down. You could pick the year, 2017. Again, what are your goals? What are your biggest threats? We've already done two of the first two pieces of this exercise. So this is my due diligence. All the calls I did, all the research I did, I wrote down what I thought a country head's goals were, biggest threats, key strategies and execution, contingencies to reduce the threats, and what the most important activities are that should be focusing on. So this is how I get to know all of our customers. So you know, I'll make a copy of this or type it up if anybody's interested. But I want to get us to that great leadership tool, because that's where you're going to talk to each other at your table. You know, at the back of the workbook, there's a handout. It's loose. It's from one of my favorite leaders, Jack Welch. And, you know, if you read his biography straight from the gut, the very first chapter was building self-confidence. If you read this list, the very number one leadership tool he points to is building self-confidence. And he says you could do it in every conversation. By the way, I love the setup of this article. I ran teams with 3 experienced people and divisions with 30,000. I managed businesses that were dying and ones that were bursting with growth. There were acquisitions, divestitures, organizational crises, moments of unexpected luck, good economies, and bad. Sounds like your world. And yet some ways of leading always seem to work. So despite all those conditions, some ways of leading always seem to work. These became my 8 rules. There is nothing about spreadsheets, metrics, or process in here. It's all about mindset. So it's a great little handbook from a pretty good manager and leader. So I'll tell you how I learned. It was after a massive failure. So in my first real job, Mark Colosi, my mentor, is developing me, he's growing me, my career is starting to get some traction and take off. He came to me one day, he says, John, are you ready to take the next step on the road to being a champion? I said, yeah, I guess. You freak me out all the time. I got used to it eventually. So he said, John, you know what champions do? I go, what? He goes, they leave nothing to chance. And you know this because you were a champion, and he actually called it football, not soccer. He goes, you went on a university scholarship. You played in Europe. How could an American do that in the early 80s? You know what this is. Again, using my own success story. So he says, John, in my hand, I am holding our sales presentation. It takes 40, 45 minutes to run through this. I need you to memorize it. You also have to explain why AT&T was broken up, so why we have fair and equal competition in telecom. You also have to go through building rapport and introducing yourself with value and then asking questions in a sequential manner. It's called qualifying and then closing for some type of action, handling objections, and then asking for referrals. This is how you run a sales call. I need you to memorize this. I didn't want to do it because it was work. So I said, let me get this right. You want me to make it sound like it's canned? There's my excuse for not doing it. And instead of yelling at me like a lot of managers would do, he looked at me, asked me a question. He goes, huh, do you know who Al Pacino is? I go, the actor? He goes, yeah, the actor. I go, I know who he is. He goes, you ever seen him on a big screen give an emotional, impassioned speech? I go, yeah. He goes, does it sound like it's canned? I go, no, it doesn't. He goes, is he making up those words on the spot? I go, no, he's not. He goes, where does he get the words from? I go, a script. He goes, a script. I'd like you to be the Al Pacino of this script. So he's removed that excuse completely. So I actually cracked a spine. I'm looking at it for the first time. There's words in here. I still don't want to do it. I look at him, I say, Mark, there's words in here I don't use. There's words in here, I don't know what they mean. He goes, that's okay. Do you know who Al Pacino is? I go, yeah, we just did this. He goes, we're doing it differently. And he goes through the same thing. And he looks at me and says, are those his words? I go, no. He goes, whose words are they? I go, a scriptwriter. He goes, do you know what I'm asking you to do? He goes, yeah, you're asking me to memorize this thing. He goes, great, how long do you need? There was no yelling, there was no animosity. And I said, 2 weeks, 2 weeks to the day. It's another Monday. He's back at my cube. And he says, Johnny, presentation, locked and loaded? I go, yeah. He goes, here's the next step on the road to being a champion. I'm going to book a first in. You and I are going to go. I'm not going to say a word. You're going to run the call. And I go, whatever. He's back in an hour. And he goes, Thursday morning, we got from 10 to 11. And by the way, they're billing $1,200 a month in long distance. And they're on MCI's MTS program. We line up really good. Most of their calls are in the Northeast. We got one on the line, Johnny. We set the hook. It's your time. Now I start to freak out. Actually learn the thing. So this is the mid-1980s.
Yeah, that was funny. That was funny.
Only to you. So this was the first day in my career I was happy to be wearing a dark suit, because this was the day I learned how much the human body could sweat. So we get to this guy's office. 10 o'clock on the nose, we're ushered into his office. Mark and I sit on one side of his desk. He sits on the other. All of a sudden, I launch in the presentation. I've heard launch. You know the guy at the end of radio commercials reading disclaimers really fast? I make that guy look slow. I run the entire 45-minute presentation into the ground in 13 minutes, staring at my shoes. I don't know how he did it, but it had to be a best practice. He invited us to leave. The one thing I really remember is that when we got into Mark's car, the digital clock on his dashboard, I'll never forget what it said. It said 10:17. My first thought was, I just self-destructed in a quarter of an hour. So Mark's driving out of the parking lot. There's silence in the car, but not in my head, because I am beating myself. You're so stupid. What made you think you could do this? You can't do this. You can't do anything. Now you got to go find another job, you loser. Remember, this was my fifth job, 3 years out of university. And those were my beliefs about me. So he looks over at me and goes, Johnny, first question. What do you think you did well in there? I said, nothing. I suck at this. His response, one of my favorite leadership tools, silence. So after a minute of silence, he looks over at me and goes, John, I saw you do some things well in there. And I bet if you look for them, you'll find them too. What'd you do well in there? And I thought about it. I said, Mark, I think I got the whole presentation in. And he goes, you not only got the whole thing in, it was in order. And you know what that told me? The countless hours you must have spent practicing. I bet a lot on your own time. Thank you. Nice job. What else? I go, oh, I think I explained the breakup of AT&T. Okay, he goes, world class, spot on. What about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? All things I would have overlooked because it didn't match my belief about me. Remember confirmation bias. So that first question, simple first question, increases my confidence, draws out success stories. And then he goes to me, Johnny, second question, and by the way, I'm gonna ask you these three questions after every call, every project. This is part of our culture. This is how we win. He goes, what'd we do wrong? Didn't even notice he switched pronouns. What did you do well? What'd we do wrong? I didn't notice till the sixth or seventh time he said it. I go, Mark, I think I went a little fast. Then he goes, a little. What else? I go, Mark, I blew off rapport. I blew off rapport, building rapport that's supposed to calm me down. I skipped right over it and just launched. He goes, excellent. I'm so glad you noticed. What else? I go, Mark, I didn't ask permission to go from one stage of the call to the next to create the yes answer flow and do the temperature checks. He goes, Johnny, that's high level analysis. Great job. He's praising me for coming up with my own screw ups. So I come up with six or seven of my own screw ups. Then he has the audacity to look over at him as he's driving. I go, Mark, did you see anything else? I am now asking him for negative feedback. There's only one thing that causes that. Confidence. Second question brings out negative feedback. Third question writes itself. Johnny, get out your pen and pad. Third question, what will you do differently next time? And together we came up with six or seven ideas, and we drilled those six or seven ideas. And that's incremental improvement. And it leverages negative feedback. It leverages negative feedback the right way. Because what do we learn more from, mistakes or successes? Sadly, most people think this man was born to be the greatest ever in his sport. No, he was born like the rest of us. Helpless, slimy, and looking like an alien. Or that was just my children. It's just a sequence. Sadly, a lot of managers skip the first question. No wonder people don't seek feedback. This is a daily habit. This should be what we do at the end of each day. This is how you figure out how you did so well the last 3-4 years. You must dig into this. You must get every brain in the game. This is how we do it. So here's what I'd like you to do at your tables. And we are only going to do this for just like 12 minutes. So all you need to do at your table is to pick a topic. It can be any topic, anything that's important to your success as a country head. These topics are just ideas. But what I'd like you to discuss at your table is come up with two or three things. After you pick your topic, come up with just two or three things that the table, that the leaders at the table are doing well in that area. Come up with two or three things that you haven't done well or perhaps have avoided. And then, lastly, come up with two or three things that you will do differently regarding this topic. Does that make sense? Okay. You got 13 minutes. Pick a leader and a spokesperson at your table, because we're going to call on a couple volunteers to share what topic they came up with and what strategies they came up with. All right, talk to each other. So, okay, I know that you probably didn't get all the time you'd like, and you could certainly continue the conversation after the session. And I have to say that you can do this all by yourself and come up with a pretty comprehensive list. You can pick even more topics. Just because this tool is simple does not mean it is profound and impactful. You know, a lot of us get windshield time or airplane time. I like to ride a bike. I like to jog. I consider all of those times reflection times. You know, we should all have been reflecting already. How am I doing in 2017 as a boss? What am I doing well? What am I not doing well? What can I do differently the rest of the year? We should be reflecting, how am I doing as a parent? How am I doing as a spouse? This tool is so immense, the areas we can use it. You know, I've taught my kids this from a very early age. The child version is high-low. Because without reflection, we seem to continue to repeat the same mistakes. This stops that. So who's the table that wants to share what topic they picked and what they came up with? Table number 5.
Hello. We're talking about, you know, are we listening to client enough? Are we truly doing what the client, listen to client needs? So taking an example in China, for example, you know, China has been long time, the renminbi is a local currency, but there are a trend of going international. And, you know, when the currency was first used to do trade settlements, but we have clients continue assets, they have a trapped liquidity in China. How can they transport the money outside? So they're pushing us, and in a way, we had trying to lead this customer to regulators. let the regulator, the PBOs in this case, understand what their needs, what are the issues, what are the pain points, and what they're doing very successfully in places like London and Singapore. Not only one single customer. Roche, the other customer, we bring a few customers. So the PBOC actually listen. So by the time 2013 and 14, they want to progress internationally, speed up. It's come to their idea, they should really open this kind of pooling, purple robot stuff, but we have been educating them for years. And by the same time, when we have sort of, understand the trend. So we have been built, thanks to the support for the regional partners, build a platform in advance. We have educated client, talk a few customers, so customers ready. So when market opened up at the time, everything was ready. So we can be, as a result of that, we have a large market share. The flip side of the other story is the e-commerce stuff.
Yeah.
For example, until a few years ago, when we look into the names like Alibaba or Tencent, at the time, it's not our target customers. So people are a lot asking through all the internet thing, the e-commerce things. But we're still thinking whether we are serving them best. Are they still our customer yet? And in the example of Uber, for example, in Taiwan, we were not able to do so on the table discussions because the AMO concern, the MSB concern kind of things that we cannot get through. So I think this is two examples. The first one, we bring customer to regulators. They and a city know each other, know exactly what they want. And then we put agenda all together. So we can take advantage of prepare for customer, prepare for ourselves. And also in the interest of regulators, they know exactly when they open up, what can be done. Is that their market? What is the practice that is in London or Singapore that gives them assurance this can be done? So these are, I think, the best things. The things not doing well is because of we think that all the the stakeholders, the risk control, the compliance, so they're all good. However, I think we sort of does not align well. For example, the business just want to push whether we can deliver this or not. While on the control side, they say, oh, we have concern in New York there. This is something we must do. Just fail to link the people together. If we can sit in their shoes, talk their concerns, or ask them to guide us how to really, get through this process, then we can align and make sure that we can ask them for guidance. I think this is something we can do differently in future, like all this new stuff, the e-commerce stuff, because MO is always a concern, is a concern, but we have to align the stakeholders, making sure this is something we are going to do. And also on our side, we also listen to their concerns. This is the reason why there's a control, there's issues there. Then ask them to guide us how to navigate or how to reach agreed points. Otherwise, we are always standing on two sides. Just cannot reach.
Wow, did anybody else get energized listening to that? I don't know if English is your first language. But that was solid and energizing. Thank you. And how simple is that? Get you and your clients on the same side of the table. Find that common ground, and then together go after some of your challenges. If you think about it, when I spoke with Esther on the phone, and she was in Kenya, she said, and I talked about the things she's doing new that seem to be working. She goes, well, we just invite two or three clients in and just have a chat. We don't pitch any products. We just want to learn, just want to have a chat. And I'm thinking, you spoke to that a little bit. And so what do we have a chat about? Why not this? When you engage your clients, they should do 70% of the talking. You should do the asking. And maybe the questions you ask are, tell me about 2017. What do you want to accomplish? What are you most worried about? How are you addressing that? How are you breaking the goals down? What activities do you want more of your team? Now you're a consultant. And then you say, all right, get me up to speed on how 2017 is going. Plan versus reality. What are you doing really, really well? What do you like the direction you're going in? What are you learning? Where are you growing? That's the first question. All right, what are you avoiding? What haven't you done well? Give it to us all. What do you hope to do differently the rest of the year? Now, they're doing all the talking, which means they're going to like the conversation. You're doing all the learning. And now you're starting to get in your mind, what programs, what products, what solutions? And it's simple. And obviously, if we do this well, they kind of walk themselves where you want them to go. And they don't realize it. And now they see a partner. And every time you meet with them from that time on, you remind them that you know. And everybody on the team that works with that client, they should know this. They should not only know it for their own team, they should know it for their clients. And it doesn't change. I mean, the stuff changes, but the process doesn't. So we could spend the rest of the day having you guys report out what you learned from each other, the best practices, leveraging somebody else's mistakes, coming up with new action items. Why don't we do this with everybody? Frontline troops. Wow, nice job. I wish we could speak with more. So this simple tool of reflection, we can improve our management process, but we can also improve our people. You know, I love learning about somebody like, well, the person whose quote we're hopefully admiring and respecting. You know, we learned about Marie Curie, at least I did, when I was a little kid growing up in science, right? I always thought she was French. Nah, she married a Frenchman. She was Polish. And she moves to France in her 20s to go to university to study science. You know, a woman studying science in that time frame. Think she faced some challenges? You know, she was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize. She was the first and the only to win Nobels in two different subjects. I mean, you tell me what it takes to win a Nobel in chemistry and one in physics. And by the way, since all the juries were male, I'm sure she could have won six. And this is her advice. Oh, and by the way, she was not only the first female to win a Nobel, the only person to win two in different topics. She's the only Nobel winner to have a child win a Nobel. And it was her daughter. I'll take advice from her. I'll take advice from her. Lifelong love affair with her husband. Great mom, great career. Maybe you can have it all, if you think you can. So these are the tools I've been trying to use on you. And yes, they're subtle. Yes, to the untrained eye, it looks like we're just shooting the breeze. But you're moved from the inside out. You know, in the Jack Welch article, that's what he talks about, these things. It's not X's and O's. That's management. This is leadership. You know, if you read Jack Welch, at the end of his career, he said, and I think it was in Winning, he goes, you know, after I became CEO for a while, I realized I don't sell anything. I don't make anything. I don't fix anything. You know what my job is? I'm the chief cheerleader. You know, at the end of his career, he said he would spend 30 to 90 minutes a day writing thank you notes to GE employees. You know what he asked all of his directs and their directs to do? To feed him with successes all the way down to the front line. And then he wrote thank you notes based on those specific successes. What do you think a GE employee would do when they got a hand-signed thank you note from Jack Welch? What do you think they would do? Would they read it? Would they feel inspired? Would they push themselves? Would they tell their family? Yes! And when they retired, would they take that and put it in a place of honor in their home? It takes 5 minutes to write a thank you note. Think Jack Welch got his 5 minutes back? Yeah. He asked his directs and theirs to feed him with success stories, and then he wrote thank you notes. Wow. He considered that a high payoff activity to bring the best out of people. Jack Welch also coined this, get every brain in the game. You might have somebody on your front line right now that says, oh, nobody cares what I think. Oh, I just do this, process, nobody cares what I think. That's a problem. What if that also person said, what if they just asked me, you know, we could fix this, we could make this smoother, we could make this easier, we could take out this step, we could change the order in here, we could make this smoother, but nobody cares what I think. Involve them. You know, I trained a guy who's now a friend in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, many, many years ago. 4 years after that, I trained the same man in Dubai. And he goes, John, I'm working my way to the States. And then I ran into him in Louisiana, his home. And he goes, John, thanks for the training classes. And by the way, I am in my element now because I came back. Nobody knows who I am. I'm going to go all leader all the time with my new young engineers. And he goes, I was challenged my very first day. He goes, I had a young man my first day work unpacking boxes back in Lafayette, Louisiana. And this guy comes in, this young man, he says, Mr. Calais, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm one of your direct reports. And I'm so glad you're here. I have a problem. I need your help. He goes, come on in, sit down. And he says, please explain the problem. So he did. Then this young engineer looked at me and said, please tell me what to do. And he goes, I caught myself. I was about to tell him. Because I knew what he should do. But I just sat back and I became a leader instead of a manager. And I said, let me think about this for a little while, but you've been thinking about it. What do you think you should do? And he gave me the answer I was about to give him. And I looked at him and said, that's what I'd do. Go do that. And he went and did it. 2 days later, same young man, different problem, same conversation. He has a good idea. I let him run. We do this about 10 times in the first 6 weeks. It's now becoming a morning routine. So I'm only working there about 6 weeks. This guy comes in, he goes, I got two cups of coffee. He goes, John, I got great news. I don't have a problem today. But I have a question I've been dying to ask you. He goes, come on in, sit down. He goes, can this conversation be off the record? And he goes, safe environment in here. And he goes, Mr. Calais, you've been my boss for 6 weeks now. I never met you beforehand. I apologize for coming to you so frequently with a problem, but every time I have a problem, I ask you what I should do. And you don't tell me what to do. You ask me what I think I should do. And whatever I say, you seem to let me go do. So my question for you is this. Are you trying to empower me, or are you a dumbass? So I go, John, what'd you say? How'd you answer? He goes, I looked at the young man and said, which do you think? The goal of leadership is to work less hours, to use less words, because we're getting things done through others. We're growing others. All those tools that were on that slide have to do with human interaction, engagement, looking people in the eye, asking questions. He said this in 1950. Welcome to the future. You're going to push people. That's your goal. You got to grow people. Most don't want to necessarily grow. It's staying the same. That's more comfortable. So when you push people outside of their comfort zone, they're going to push back. They may even fight you. You can't. You can't fight back. Leading above the line means embracing and exhibiting the higher levels of human emotion. I spent some time below the line. Lonely and it's not fun. There are two things I say to myself every morning. I already told you the first. Today I win or learn. Today I win or learn. And the second thing I say is stay above the line. And sometimes it's hard. But it's always the right thing. And that's what people remember. That's what people remember. So in conclusion, I want to remind you of your biggest challenge as you move forward to continue to be the best bank on the street. Your biggest challenge is a limited mindset. And what we're trying to build and instill is an unlimited mindset. How do we create a culture of it? And because we're talking about leadership, really, what can you give? It's not necessarily complex or large. It's just being with them, being there, your presence. We're going to make these slides available to you so you can grab the quote slides. I love this slide because it takes two of our models that we've shared and hopefully you've embraced, puts them on one slide, really tells us the roadmap ahead. So in closing, I want to share with you some words from John F. Kennedy. You know, he took office the month I was born. So he's elected president in 1960, takes office in January 61. He inherits goals and people from the prior boss, and he looks at one of the goals, the U.S. space program, and the U.S. was way behind the Soviet Union. And this was a pretty big deal because the world thought whichever superpower won the race to space would win a nuclear exchange. And I remember as a little boy having to hide under a desk, and we could be vaporized in 20 minutes. And so John F. Kennedy, he owned the situation of being behind. And he realized that there was not a clear goal set for the program. And one of the first things he did as president is he said this: "I believe this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing an American on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth." Now, there's a manager. That's a goal with a deadline, very clear and specific goal. It's not vague or general at all. But then he got pushback. He got blowback. "Sir, we can't do that. It's impossible. We don't have the technology. We don't have the people. We don't have the resources. And we have all these other priorities." There were so many naysayers, even from his own circle. So he said, "They don't believe." And then he went back and wrote a leadership speech. And then he gave it four times in the next 6 weeks because he wanted everybody to know this isn't going to change. So here's a couple paragraphs to leave you with. "Surely the opening vistas of space promise high cost and hardship as well as high reward. So it is not surprising that some would have us stay where we are just a little bit longer to rest and to wait. But this country was not built by those who waited and rested and wished to look behind them. But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And we may well ask, why 35 years ago fly across the Atlantic? Why climb the highest mountain? Because we choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do those other things. Not because they're easy, but because they're hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. So we have given this program a high national priority, even though I realize that this is in some measure an act of faith and vision, for we do not know what benefits await us." And with that, a different gear was found, and more fuel was found. And it was an arbitrary deadline in the future. But two people walked on the moon in July of 69, and two more walked on the moon in November of 69, and they went with the computing power in your smartphone. Think about how far we've come technologically since then. I don't even believe the U.S. could do it 9 years from now, even with a great advance in technology. And it was faith. In all, 12 people walked on the moon. And the sad footnote of the story is, more and more people are believing it never happened because this can overwrite fact. And by the way, there's no atmosphere on the moon, which means there's no wind, which means the footprints, the dune buggies, the flags, it's all still there. All you got to do is look. So in closing, I want to thank you for your time and attention. It is the most valuable resource you have. You've been kind and generous, and I know it's been a long day. And I sincerely hope that the information and tools and skills that we have shared, and hopefully we all embrace, will first and foremost allow you to have a better day, and then allow you to help others to have better days. Thank you for your time, everybody. Appreciate it.
Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show. This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number 2logical.com/insider, and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at 2Logical. 2Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. 2Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs, or just want to say hey, head over to 2logical.com.